This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago, and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only. In a recent study by the Harris Poll, on behalf of Express Employment Professionals, 71% of hiring decision makers are willing to hire contingent workers to meet their business needs.
But more than half of those hiring expect to face challenges in finding qualified candidates.
Express Employment Professionals is here to make hiring easier.
Express is in the business of recruiting talent.
Discover for yourself how working with the workforce experts can solve your hiring challenges.
Visit expresspros.com for a location near you.
We got some sad news recently. A towering figure in our lives, or at least in my life, and someone who has figured in kind of prominently on this podcast, passed away. David Combs, the incredible studio teacher who we've brought up multiple times, passed away rather suddenly. He was only in his early 70s, and we got the news from our other incredible studio teacher, Wesley Staples. And so we thought we'd take a moment, and you know, we had actually been talking about having David and Wesley on this podcast just because they've come up and they were such a huge part of our show and our lives, and you know, we've noticed that the behind the scenes stories tend to involve them. So anyway, this is not great news, but we thought we'd just take a moment to talk about David.
David was like Ryder said, we've talked about him a lot on this podcast. David was just a really, really special, unique man. He was, I still think to this day, the smartest person I've ever met in my life.
Yeah.
He was smart in every subject. There was nothing he didn't know. There wasn't anything you couldn't have a conversation with him about. Even in just very casual conversation, you would learn so much from him. He was also very quirky and weird in some of the funniest ways. We've talked about how he could
and
just deliver
right?
very yeah. eccentric. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. yeah. And maybe, can we say, I think he would be okay with this, a snob.
He was a snob. I think he took pride in being a snob.
Yes. He did. Yeah. Yeah.
He brought me to my first museum. He brought me to my first opera. He once bought me an art print and had it framed because at the time I was dating Lance, and there was something, we went to this museum and there was a painting on the wall that I really liked. And he bought me the print of it because he said that the reason I liked it is because it reminded me of Lance. And I had never really put it together, but it was a young woman looking lovingly at a young man. And he said that he thought it, you know, that it was special, that he remembered when we were at the museum together, seeing me connect, because I was not a museum kid. I was like, this is so boring. Please don't make me do this. And he was like, no, you're going to go and you're going to like it. And he said that he felt like that was the first moment that I actually connected with an art piece. And so he bought me the print and he had it framed for me and I still have it. And yeah, I mean, David could deliver just a soul-crushing blow in one sentence without meaning to, like the time when I was like, I have a crush on David Letterman. He's like, so you're attracted to power. he's also, I told you guys that he's the one who called a bathing suit a bathing costume. And I absolutely love it, a bathing costume. I still call it a bathing costume. I have thought about David, I don't know, once a month. Every month since the time Boy Meets World has ended, at least, there are things that come up in my life all the time. The day we got this news about David passing away, I was having a hard time not being in tears all day. And one of the memories that came up for me that I then ended up telling producer Jensen Karp, husband of this podcast, about, that I thought you guys might appreciate, was that for whatever reason, one day, my mom wasn't able to take me home from work. She couldn't pick me up. And I don't know why I then didn't go home with Ryder or Ben like I sometimes would. I would sometimes go home to Encino with Ryder or Ben, and my mom would then leave Calabasas and pick me up in Encino. But for whatever reason, that couldn't be done on this one particular day. And so David Combs drove me home. And David Combs, in his car, it was very hot. I don't think the air was working. We had the windows down and he talked the whole way home. He also drove like in the slow lane, very slowly. And
yeah, I mean, I think some part of the eccentricity of David is that he was the kind of guy who could tell you the origin of a word.
Yeah.
And its history and the history of its usage in seven different languages, but then he couldn't keep his car clean.
Correct.
You know what I mean?
It was a not clean car. It was very cramped feeling. There was stuff everywhere. And it was a long drive and we were in traffic and there was no air and the windows were down and my hair was whipping all over the place. And he got lost and I was like trying to tell him where to go, but he wasn't. He also didn't seem like a great driver. Like maybe he was not familiar with freeways.
Always frazzled by like real life stuff.
Yes, yeah. Very frazzled. And we got home and he walked me up to the door and my mom opened the door and David and my mom talked for a little bit. And then David left and my mom had been working in the garage. So the way our house was set up was that the garage was directly next door to like where the front door was. So I walked in and my mom was like, I was like talking to my mom. And my mom's like, I'm working in the garage. Follow me into the garage. So I follow her into the garage as David is walking down and I start loudly complaining about this car ride home with David. I can't believe you made me go home with David Combs. It was terrible. There was no air conditioning. It was 1,000 degrees. My hair was whipping all over the place and he wouldn't roll up the windows. And then we got lost and he wasn't listening to me and there was stuff all over the car. And I'm just acting exactly like a fast, little brat, just complaining about how awful it was that I had to make this drive home with David Combs. And I was so mad. And David heard every word.
Oh, no.
But David didn't let me get away with it and just... Nope. Let me know.
No.
No. He turned around and he walked back up to the front door and he rang the doorbell and the doorbell rings and we're like, who's that? And I realize it's David and I open the door and I go, hi. He goes, Danielle, I heard everything you said. I'm sorry that it was such an awful experience for you driving in my car. I thought I was doing something nice and wonderful for you, doing you the favor of taking you home. And I have never been more mortified in my entire life. And there have been times when I have woken up at 2 o'clock in the morning.
and you're still thinking about it.
Go back to sleep.
Yep.
Because I'll be like, remember that time in 1994 when David Combs drove you home and he heard you talking bad, like bad mouthing him? Just absolutely devastating.
Yeah.
He was quite a guy.
Yeah.
I was just going to say very briefly, because I was only with him for a year. Because I only had, but he was my only teacher for a year. Like, Wesley was never my teacher. I only had David for one year. And he would do very interesting and unique things with you to pass the time. Because one of the things that had happened was, we've talked about this, I was a terrible student before Boy Meets World started. And then you're sitting in there with one teacher who, as Danielle said, is one of, if not the smartest people you'll ever meet in your life. He spoke seven languages. He used to be the tutor to the Shah of Iran's kids. I mean, he was a very smart man. And my school back in Connecticut didn't know what to do with me. So essentially they said, pick a college and take whatever courses you want. So by a combination of picking the courses I want and having David as my teacher, he taught me to love learning. Mm-hmm. And what would happen was, I would have a week off in between, you know, we'd have our week hiatus, but because I lived in Connecticut, I wasn't flying home every time. It was just too much. So a lot of times David would take me places, and he would pick these places that were educational without you knowing they would be educational.
I believe he did that with you too.
Oh yeah. So like one of the things we did, he called me, he's like, hey, the LA subway is opening up today. It's the inaugural ride. We're going. It was for one block. It was as much as it was open. We drove downtown. We got on the subway for the inaugural ride. We drove one block and we walked upstairs. Mm-hmm. He'd call me again later. He goes, have you ever been to the oldest street in Los Angeles? Come on, we're going to, was it Alvarado Street? We're going there to get some good Mexican food. Let's go. And he'd pick you up and you'd go and you'd do stuff. And incredible. It was just these little moments that he would take with you. And then when we got the closest was my final project for senior year in Latin was to translate the Odyssey. And he and I sat there every day and worked on Latin together. We sat on the couch and I would want him to just translate it. And he's like, I'm not translating this book for you. He's like, this is not how this works. And so we'd work through all the conjunctions and stuff.
I would sit there with you guys. I don't know if you remember, but that's how I learned the story of the Odyssey.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I would sit with you guys while you were doing it. Because then I did it later because I then decided to take Latin because you guys had done it.
Okay.
And I would sit there and listen to you, you know, and you would basically be telling me the story of the Odyssey because you would be translating from the Latin.
It was so incredible. Cool. He was brilliant, eccentric, weird. He could be rude. He could be off-putting. He would do things that he would pick up right away. Like for a week, he would ride his folding bike to school.
Yes.
You remember that?
Yes.
And then I'd have to drive him home because he'd be like, well, I can't drive home. And I'd be like, how'd you get here? And he's like, I drove my bike on the freeway. I'm like, you were on the freeway on that little folding bike? And it was just, he was an odd man who could really make learning a ton of fun. And I wish I knew him better than I did. And you and Danielle certainly knew him better than I did. But he was a good guy. And he will certainly always hold a very special place in my heart, especially when I think of anything intellectual. He's somehow in the conversation. And I'm honored to have known him. I really am.
Yeah.
I think maybe it just needs to be stated for our listeners who don't know, a studio teacher usually is not this involved.
No.
Right? You know, like a studio teacher job is actually sort of like, you know, it varies from being basically a daycare, you know, where you're just sort of there, or like you're a substitute teacher, you're a substitute teacher who's there for all subjects. So, you know, a lot of them specialize in one or two things, but really they specialize in just making sure that you get your homework done, basically. Like they keep you in the classroom and they oversee you doing your homework. And David, as obviously from the stories you're hearing, just went so far above and beyond that. You know, he, within the first year of being on Boy Meets World, he flew up to my hometown to meet with all of my teachers at my tiny school in the middle of the woods. I mean, I had a whole school of only 50 kids, and he met with every one of my teachers. He took us to everything. He took me to London and Paris for weeks. Took me to my first ballet, my first opera. Yeah. Took me to movie screenings, Clockwork Orange, amazing late night, midnight screenings of movies in L.A. He brought David Trainer. He found out David Trainer did Shakespeare, and he brought him into our classroom to teach us Shakespeare.
Yeah.
Took me to poetry readings, local music shows. When I wanted to leave high school early, he convinced me to stay and instead got me signed up for correspondence courses like you will, at college courses, got me, you know, teaching that. I mean, he sent me up for my interview at Occidental College, where I ended up going to school. I wasn't even going to apply. He just was like, no, you, and he set me up with the interview and I got in. You know, it just changed my life.
He loved being a teacher.
He took it upon himself to make sure that the kids he came in contact with on TV shows were not going to wind up being uncultured dummies because they had had bad educations because they had been taken out of real school.
Exactly.
He looked at it as an opportunity to actually give you an even better education than you were going to get at whatever school you came from, because you could be one-on-one or three-on-one, however many kids were in his tiny little class on a set. He really made sure we were well-rounded, cultured, educated little weirdos just like him. And I think he succeeded.
The one thing that he did, and I know he did this with you, Danielle, I don't know if he ever did this with you, Will, but that changed me irrevocably and I will always cherish, is every once in a while you'd be in the classroom, usually not when you were done with your regular schoolwork, and he would just pull down a book, because he had a classroom full of books, and start reading poetry.
Yes.
And you know, poems you had never heard of, like, but he would have, you know, the great pantheon of English literature at his fingertips, John Donne, John Keats, Shakespeare, anybody. And he would read, and not only read and talk about the poems and like, go, but he would start to cry.
And I
remember him weeping openly, reading poetry. And I think about that now. It's like, not only was this man like engaging with us intellectually and saying like, learn these things because they're good for your brain, but he was unafraid to show that art is emotional, that it changes you, that it makes you feel things, and that, you know, and that it's okay to cry reading this poem or listening to this poem. And like, you know, I read poetry to my son all the time now. And I don't think I would ever do that except for David.
He also taught me how to read poetry. Like, I remember him, because he wouldn't just pull down books and read it himself. He would pull down a book and open up to a thing and say, read me this, read this to me. And I would read it, and I would read it the way I thought poetry was supposed to be read, like with the pauses at the end of every line or whatever. And he would say, you don't have to pause there. You can just read it like a story. You can just read through. You can just read, you know. And I remember him, you know, there's something, for whatever reason, that can feel intimidating. Poetry can feel intimidating.
He took away
all of the intimidation and just made it, you just read it. You can read it. You can read a small, we can just read it for 2 minutes. You don't have to sit down and dedicate 4 hours to poetry. You can read it for 5 minutes. You can read it before bed. You can read it whenever. And so, David Combs, truly a life-changing man who we will miss very much. And we just wanted to give that little tribute to him, because we were really, honestly, we were a bit devastated to find out that news. So welcome to Pod Meets World. I'm Danielle Fishel.
I'm Ryder Strong.
And I'm Will Friedle.
It's easy for us to strike up a streaming service or bust out a DVD to watch our childhoods, but for actual home movies, it's not that easy. That's why we want to tell you about our friends at Legacy Box.
Legacy Box is the safest and easiest way to digitize those old school memories you have as VHS tapes, stacks of pictures, or those little camcorder cassettes that you'd have no idea how to play now.
And Mother's Day is right around the corner. There's no better gift for the whole family than giving them a way to relive moments like a wedding day or your first steps or that time you fell into the pool at Uncle Rick's house on the 4th of July. The patio was slippery, okay?
Legacy Box takes it all. 15 different types of analog media, even photo negatives. They professionally digitize by hand right here in the USA and then send you back a thumb drive or upload it to the cloud, as well as return your originals.
We recently used Legacy Box to get some VHS tapes converted. Truthfully, we had no idea what was even on them. And we were thrilled to see one of them was my husband's first shave. His parents recorded it, and now we have this incredible memory to watch that we didn't even know existed. It was safe and easy, and it means a lot to us.
Join over 1.5 million families that have trusted Legacy Box with their memories.
Go to legacybox.com/world to save 60% during their best Mother's Day sale ever.
That's legacybox.com/world.
Danielle, tell us a little about your hydration style. Let's say you're thirsty. Are you chugging a glass, taking little sips, pouring it over your head like it's Flashdance? What's going on?
Well, we recently started karate, and the minute we get out of karate, we have been bringing our liquid IV, dumping it into some water, and I chug it because I am parched.
That is absolutely true. Well, I can tell you how I quench my thirst. Thank you so much for asking. It's with liquid IV.
With three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink.
And 8 vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness.
It really does quench your thirst faster than water alone. And it tastes good.
And with no artificial sweeteners and zero sugar, it's your time to try it.
Flavor-wise, I'm partial to pear and green grape. It's a perfect way to hydrate before a big day, especially if you've been up late the night before, which, honestly, I never am, but I'm somehow still tired.
I like white peach. It reminds me of being classy, and I want to swirl it and comment on what year I think it was made, and I think it was this year.
And it's incredibly conveniently packaged. You can just carry it in your pocket all day and then add it to your water. Bingo. Tastes great, and your thirst is quenched, and carpe diem.
I've used it after our long flights to live shows, and it worked to make me feel refreshed and ready to talk about MASH.
However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco.
Or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code WORLD at checkout.
That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code WORLD at liquidiv.com.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things: watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car. Backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
So, we are going to recap Season 2, Episode 22, Career Day, which originally aired May 12, 1995. The synopsis is that after Sean finds out his mother has run away, his father takes off to find her, leaving him completely alone, looking for somewhere to stay. Also, Eric is having trouble studying for the SATs, and Alan feels like a disappointment at Corey's school career day. It was directed by David Trainer. It was written by Matthew Nelson.
Is this his first episode? It is his first one, yes. Right? That's what I thought. I wrote that down. I was like, is this so his first funny. One? I didn't think he was there at all in season two.
Wow, that's so amazing.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that, but because there's something about this episode that felt very, I don't know, that just makes sense.
It makes sense.
Like this feels like a Nelson episode.
Feels very Nelson.
Yes. And, you know, we talked about how he was like a Sean voice in the room.
Yeah.
And like, that's clear in this episode. Yeah.
Yeah. Matthew Nelson. So it is guest starring Blake Clark, who arrives for the first time as Chet Hunter.
Yay.
Jason Marsden as Jason Marsden. Darlene Vogel returns as Catherine Cat Tompkins. And Peter Tork of the Monkees as Jedediah Lawrence, also for the first time.
Topanga's dad.
Yes.
Topanga's dad number one.
Will Estes returns as Alex. So to recap, we are in Mr. Turner's classroom. Alan walks into Mr. Turner's classroom for career day. Corey is bummed. Corey says everyone will know his dad isn't an NBA player. He's a grocer's son, a son of a grocer.
Son of a grocer.
Son of a grocer.
Alan comes over to Corey and Sean to read his note cards about how many different kinds of rice they have. Even Sean admits he's happy he isn't Corey. Jedediah, Topanga's dad, is up first for career day. He tells everyone he is a luthier, someone who makes musical instruments. Sean jokes and says that is the nuttiest religion.
I'm a Presbyterian, so to each his own.
Yeah. And Topanga tells her daddy to share who called their house last night. And he says, Tippy, they don't want to hear that. Sean and Corey can't believe Tippy and they start to make fun of her. But Topanga turns around and growls at them.
Are you ever called Tippy again? Is there ever a Tippy again? Because that you figured that would stick somehow.
Well, yeah. Or maybe the same actor playing her dad would stick.
I mean, well, yeah, I know. Yeah. But you figured Tippy is something where it's like somebody would call her that eventually down the line again.
This just felt like a season one beat. Like this whole run. Yeah. Because like you turning and growling was very much like the
original Topanga.
Original Topanga. And then, of course, your dad being this sort of hippy dippy musician, luthier. That's
and you guys making fun of Topanga for being that. Yep. I mean, it felt very.
Danielle, you look extremely tan to me.
I agree. Yes, very tan.
But then I'm also just off the clearly beach. Starting to deal with acne because I am also incredibly made up this entire episode. Like,
are you? I didn't notice that at all.
I didn't notice that either.
I'm starting to break out something awful.
Yeah, I was trying to figure out because normally I'm very tan in the very early parts of the of a season because I would have come back from Hawaii. But I noticed that as well. And I wonder if it was just a makeup choice.
Yeah,
maybe.
Or maybe, you know, like we talked about when we were recapping the last episode, there was this weird gap. Maybe we really did have like a break, like a spring break for some reason this year.
I don't know.
Had to have been something. It had to have been something that happened.
Yeah, I'm not sure. So guess it is then revealed it was Bruce Springsteen who called the house. Everyone is very impressed. Alan jokes, well, he can make these guitars, but can he play them? And then Jedediah starts playing the guitar perfectly like he's in the Monkees. And Alan even says he's toast. And then we get our first little commercial break.
So how do you guys feel about that? Hey, little girl, is your daddy home joke?
Is your daddy home joke?
Really not good.
Yeah.
No, not great.
So Peter Tork's dad or mom, I can't remember which one, was my parents' college professor.
Really?
In Connecticut. He taught, I think it was at the University of Connecticut. He or she, I don't know if it was his mom or dad, but was one of their, I think, law professors back in the day.
Oh,
and I remember telling that to Peter, and he was like, oh. Okay, well, nice meeting you.
All right,
thanks for coming to the show.
Good story. Okay. So then we're in Mr. Turner's classroom. Alan is up next for his career day presentation. Mr. Turner jokes Alan isn't going to talk about how much rice he stocks. There's more to it than that. And Alan throws away his first note card with all the rice jokes, which is...
Again, Rusty's so good. He played
great
the
episode for
just
him.
Going back to the start of his like how many rices do you think you have? Like he's so excited.
I know.
And Sean's like 10. He's like
10.
21. Like he's so excited by
not even including the short grains.
Yeah, the short grains or the long grains. He plays kind of goofy excited so well.
Yeah.
And then he instantly can change into Alan's the dad, but that kind of like, ooh, I'm in my element, goofy excited. Oh god, Rusty.
Oh, his range in this episode is remarkable.
Awesome.
Because we end up
totally different.
That sort of goofy beginning.
Yep.
And it's wonderful.
So cool.
Alan nervously reads off his cards about being a grocer, that he's proud of his job since everyone needs groceries. He says they actually sell dreams. And a student, Will Estes, yells, "What aisle?
What aisle?"
Which is funny.
It's a great heckle. What aisle? Yeah.
So then we continue in Turner's classroom. The speech is now over and Alan is walking around the classroom handing out coupons.
Okay, so who didn't get a coupon? Who didn't get a coupon? He was great.
It's so funny. And Turner says, that took guts. Corey asks Sean if the presentation was as bad as he thought. And Sean says, no, he got 60 cents off of Apple Jacks. And then... Chet Hunter, Sean's dad, walks in for the first appearance ever.
Like a tornado.
But it's
also
so great.
It's such a Nelson thing because it's such a great misdirect. You think it's going to be an episode about how Corey's embarrassed by his dad.
Yep.
And it's going to be the stereotypical, he doesn't have the cool job at work. And the story's obviously going one way. And then bam, here comes Blake.
Yep.
And it takes it to a whole different thing. I thought it was really clever the way they set it up. They really thought you were going one way, and then they just throw in this.
It still ends up paying off the Alan storyline.
Yeah, it does. That's what's even more amazing about it.
It does come back around perfectly.
But Blake comes in like a wrecking ball, and it's phenomenal. Ugh, so good.
Yeah, so good. So Chet apologizes for being late. He says he was in the hall smoking. Don't endorse it. Don't deny it.
Don't deny it.
So
don't endorse it. Don't deny it.
that he hits
and he
Dusty.
Slaps Dusty on the back so hard. It's so great. Corey asks Sean what his dad does for work, and Sean tells him to shush. He wants to find out too, which is amazing. Chet says he doesn't make things or sell food. It's hard to put a finger on what he does, but he mostly buys and sells things. Corey points out that Sean isn't breathing through his speech. You go, sorry. Chet says sometimes he sells a fridge, sometimes a car, but what he sells best is selling ideas. He says he even came up with a 24-hour news station. And Topanga asks, you came up with CNN? He says, yes, that's exactly what I called it, Chet News Network. But he told it to a Southern man in an elevator who stole his idea. He then asks Mr. Turner his last name, and Turner says, no relation.
No relation. Just
a little Ted Turner joke. Hey. Corey says Sean's dad is something, and Sean agrees. Yeah, he's something. Chet continues his dishonest rant and asks everyone, who here has a microwave oven? Students raise their hands, and Chet then says, you're welcome. So then we're in the school cafeteria. Eric tells Jason he's in the SAT zone and all his other senses are shut down. And then he drops his bowl of soup on his lap and doesn't notice.
This is one of the biggest laughs we've ever had.
I remember this, people loving all this physical stuff. And it was, this is also the start of dramatic show going on. Give Eric wacky stuff to do as dramatic show goes on around him. This was like the genesis of that. Because I remember this. I remember pulling the soup into my lap and
really,
Marsden being there. And
I honestly didn't see what happened at first. Like, it kind of like, boom. And then the audience just kept going.
Yeah.
And I was like, what just happened? And it didn't really register for me. Like, so I kind of missed it, but man,
I saw it happen right off the bat. It also missed husband, you know, Jensen Karp, producer of this podcast, also missed it.
Okay.
And he was like, wait, what happened? I said, he just tipped his whole bowl of soup into his lap. And the audience just, I mean, you're right. It's one of the longest audience laughs we've ever heard. It was so funny. Yeah. This whole
Jason's
little
reaction,
beat then.
Just looking that too, at, yeah. You know, it's him giving the deadpan look while you...
And still with the bread, like there's no soup there, but I'm like sopping up stuff on the tray. It was fun. This is so much fun. The start of just they're gonna go act and be dramatic, and I'm gonna do the wacky stuff.
Yeah.
Which is, I had, especially at the beginning, I had no problem with. I thought it was great. It was kind of like, all right,
so funny.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that it is a storyline which now is like the third time about you being bad at school or struggling in school,
but like, still studying. It's like, right.
Yeah, you're trying hard.
Yeah, trying to study for the SATs, and I know how important they are, and that kind of. So it's, I'm curious to see where the transition, the actual transition, is going to be to like, he doesn't care about it.
Just doesn't care.
Yeah.
Interesting. So Jason tells Eric he spilled soup on his lap, and then Eric says, what? And then he looks down and starts screaming. Corey nearby is eating with Sean, and he says he envies the son of a baseball player who let the ball go under his legs at the World Series. He's referencing Red Sox first baseman Bill Buckner.
He is. 86. Yikes. I can still hear the call.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
But Sean says Alan wasn't that bad. Corey asks, the cantaloupe is your friend? And Sean admits that part was bad. But I don't know, guys. Shady Melon.
Shady Melon. I didn't even think about that. Shady Melon's back.
Is your friend.
Shady Melon is your friend. Everybody knows one. Corey says Chet was amazing and told great stories. And Sean says, yeah, that's just what they were, stories. A student is eating cantaloupe nearby and says he's eating Alan's best friend. And Corey says he has to transfer. Chet and Mr. Feeney walk in, Mr. Feeney closely following Chet, saying Chet is not allowed to be on campus unless he is a student, faculty, or staff, but Chet says he has business on this campus. Chet even tells him he's George Feeney, principal of the high school, which this is a great bit.
Yeah.
Feeney obviously has a problem with this, and he tells him he is not George Feeney, and Chet says, I'm parked in his spot, ain't I? So great. Sean then runs over and explains to Mr. Feeney that Chet is his dad. Feeney backs away and says he's very proud of Sean. Chet says he's surprised to hear that. And Mr. Feeney says, so am I. And then he leaves. As Feeney leaves, Chet asks Sean if he kissed his mom goodbye this morning. And Sean says, yes. Chet says, good. That's going to have to last you a while. Chet says she left them. And Sean says she'll come back just like she always does. But Chet says this time is different because she took off and took the house with her. And then he says this great line. That's the problem with having a mobile home. It's a You can move it.
You can move it.
Just great.
Can we talk a little bit about how dark that is, that your mom not only leaves you, but is taking all of your possessions. Forget Chet. Just Sean. Taking all of your possessions, the place you've got to live, your bed, everything, I'm out. That's super dark.
I know.
I mean, it is. It went from the funny stuff in season one of like, or my uncle this, or my aunt that, or being in the trailer park.
This season, man. I don't know.
Was that really what it went? Because now it's like, yikes.
Yeah. No, it's so interesting. Like, this is that transition that, you know, we've sort of been building towards, but especially with basically wrong side of the tracks to now, it's like, this is taking Sean's poverty and family situation, which was base, you know, jokes, like off camera jokes, and turning them on their head and being like, yeah, what if this was the reality for a kid? And it's great. I think,
and, I agree. Oh, I think it's awesome, but it is, it's dark. A cool
transition. It's cool. And you gotta, and you can only do that when you have somebody like Blake, right? Because it's like, it's the ridiculousness and the over the topness of this guy makes that darkness softer or lighter.
Yeah.
I don't mix that metaphor. But you know what I mean? Like, it's okay. It's like, you're able to be laughing at it while also still recognizing that is really awful.
Really awful. But he's the eternal optimist, which is great. You know, he's always, the glass is half full, and I invented the glass anyway, so no big deal. He's, exactly. You know, he's that guy, and it makes it work, you know? So,
but I'm curious, because we do end up bringing my mom into the show.
And who's named Verna?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Because we were talking about how you never saw her, and you just, it was like Vera from Cheers. And when we do, I was like, oh, they actually even named her Verna.
They were similar.
Yeah.
I don't remember what season it is. I don't know if it's like fifth or sixth or whatever, but
it's definitely late.
We do some dramatic, and I think we end up kind of addressing these abandonment points.
Yeah. It's good. It gives your character so much more depth. But God, Blake does just come in like a wrecking ball. It's awesome. Yeah,
so great.
Oh, so good.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things: watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
Guys, this is a very big deal for me, so we need to treat it as such.
Should we have a horn or something?
Cue the horn!
Target Circle, the program we all know and love, and that I am a card-carrying member of, now has automatic deals.
That's right. The all-new Target Circle is free and easy to join.
And the simplest way to take advantage of the most deals at Target.
Now, when you shop in-store or online, all the incredible Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout. You don't have to do anything.
And the brand new Target Circle 360 offers unlimited same-day delivery.
It's the fastest way to get an order to your door or someone else's. I'm sending Danielle a box of Oreos.
Yum, thank you.
Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for the first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price.
And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day.
Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details.
Same day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in store or at target.com/circle card.
Finding the right person for your team can be challenging. When it's time to hire, turn to Express Employment Professionals.
In a recent study by the Harris Poll, on behalf of Express Employment Professionals, 63% of hiring decision makers are planning to increase headcount at their company this spring, and more than half are doing so due to increased volumes of work.
Don't let the work overwhelm you. Let Express handle your hiring.
Express Employment Professionals is here to make hiring easier. We're in the business of recruiting talent.
Discover for yourself how working with the workforce experts can solve your staffing challenges.
With more than 860 locally owned offices, you'll find one near you at expresspros.com.
Each year, more than 70,000 businesses turn to Express to manage their hiring.
Make the most of your time and leave recruiting and hiring to the experts at Express.
Visit expresspros.com today.
So when Sean asks what they're going to do now, Chet says they're going to go after her. Do you still have that keen sense of smell? Sean says he can't just ditch school. He's got to tell somebody. Chet says, okay, but he has to leave before that little mustache man has a duck. On his way out, Chet tells Corey that his dad, the cantaloupe man, is good people. Mark my word. Then he leaves. Corey asks,
this kind of bothered me in the previous scene and then in this one. Just a logic point. Chet's not there for Rusty's.
No, I thought the same thing. He's not. He's also not there for Danielle's father. And he's exactly, like, this guy makes stuff. It. And it's like, well, you weren't there for any of that.
Hold on. Stupid logic points.
They tried to address it by saying, sorry, I was late. I was actually in the hall having a smoke. So he overheard the whole thing. He overheard.
He said I was in the hall
having a smoke.
All right. So that
Wow, you could smoke in a school hallway?
No, of course not.
Absolutely. That's
unless
not allowed.
Unless you walk into the bathroom and say, cool.
Right.
So that way they could reveal the character as a surprise, but still have him reference.
Okay. Exactly. So he says I was late, but actually I wasn't in the hall. I was just in the hall having a smoke.
I said that because I missed that, and then I was just bummed.
Me too.
So they did cover
it. Good call.
So Corey asks Sean if he's okay, and Sean pretends like he's fine, and he goes to help his dad, and Corey is left with concerns. And then we're in the Matthews kitchen. Eric and Jason walk in talking about their SATs. Jason is using big SAT words, and eventually Eric yells at him to shut up. Alan hears this and asks what's wrong, and Eric says he has a stiffness in his back and all across his shoulders. And Alan tells him,
"Do you remember this, Will?"
No, didn't remember any of this.
So funny.
I remember the burned clothes for some reason.
I know, because why are your clothes burned?
But I don't think we ever address it, do we?
No. We have no idea what's happened to you.
Yeah, and I think I want to say that that same outfit minus the burns has been worn before, or I owned that exact same outfit.
Right, or it was yours.
One of those things, yeah.
Oh, that's so funny. So Alan tells him that's because he has a coat hanger in his jacket. No, really, you do. And he pulls out a full coat hanger. This also reveals that all of his clothes are ripped and burned. You like take off your jacket and we just see your clothes are completely shredded and burned. And it's never explained.
Nope.
And I guess we've really just... I don't know. So many things. I think the point might be that there are, if you're not really paying attention and all your senses are gone, there are so many things you could burn yourself on out in the world.
Just keep getting burned.
Well, I mean, over and over
joke.
Again.
I mean, for the rest of the episode, Eric's just going to keep hurting himself and burning himself or electrocuting himself or walking into trees. And I was thinking, and it's funny, I'm just realizing now, like, so the device is that you're like, you're so focused on the SATs that you've lost the ability to like basically function otherwise, right?
Right.
But this does become Eric.
Like, right.
And so in a way, I wonder if this episode inaugurated that idea in the writer's minds that you're just really funny to watch being ridiculous.
Goofy. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, again, so they had this reason for you to be this ridiculous and goofy. And then they just kind of made that your character and just went with it. And it also, a lot of it happens off camera, which I thought was interesting. And I feel like in some ways, as the show goes on, they brought it on camera. Like you know, it has to sort of start off camera because it's kind of cartoony and ridiculous, but eventually you'll just be doing these kinds of antics and physical humor on camera.
Yeah. Well, I think it's also, I think they really, like you both said at the beginning, the laugh with the soup was one of the biggest laughs we've gotten.
Yeah.
That's not just because I was being super funny. That is because the rest of the episode is, it's kind of dramatic. So it makes the laughs, the goofiness sharper.
Right.
So, you know, it's kind of, you see this juxtaposition of the two different storylines of this absurdity and then this almost kind of soap opera drama that's going on next to it. And so I think the writers realize, like, ooh, we can get him really sharp laughs and we can have them sucked into this part of the conversation. And so all of a sudden it's that balance between the two, and it started to work. It just did.
Yeah.
So it was, I noticed that as well, but it was fun. I mean, that's how I looked at it. It's like, it was fun. Put on clothes that are all burned and you're going to be making loud noises and burning yourself here. Burning. It's like, okay. Like that just was goofy. Yeah. Loved it.
Eric says he's not going to go to college, just like Alan. And Alan says he should go to college just so that eventually when one day he's at his son's career day, he doesn't have to say he's a grocer. Eric asks, what's the matter? We're all going to die anyway. And Jason responds by saying, well, aren't we nihilistic? Some might even say vacuitous, showing off his new SAT smarts. And Eric asks, if you're so smart, why don't you understand? Shut up. Which I thought was very funny. Eric says he's going to do well with his street smarts and natural instincts, and then he places his hand on a hot stove and runs upstairs. Amy walks in and asks what happens, and when she finds out, she says, again?
See, it's starting to establish that
it's
not just, maybe this is just Eric's way, you know? Like, this is where,
Yeah, we're getting there.
Yeah, we might call it that Eric is a little bit clumsy.
Yeah.
So then we hear Eric from upstairs, and Amy says, oh, my fault, I left the iron on. Amy asks Alan how career day went, and Alan says he envies the baseball player who let the ball go between his legs at the World Series. Bill Buckner is really getting it rough this episode.
Yeah, was that the second Bill Buckner?
Reference? Yep.
Man.
They're not going to let him go.
They are. They have now. They've all actually forgiven, not only forgiven Buckner, but realized that all the hate towards him was ridiculous. They invited him back to Fenway. They gave him this big day. He absolutely
has a nice.
There another guy, like the Cubs fan who caught the
ball, which is another one where, you know, it's like the team let the lead go. It's not that. I mean, it was, as a fan, you don't interfere with the, but you're also, your instinct is to reach up for a foul ball. That's what you do as a fan. So it's tough. Poor Buckner.
So Alan says he's boring because of his job, but Amy says that's what he does for work, not all he does. She also says, would I have married you if you were boring? And Alan says, apparently. Amy says, I bet Corey is very proud of you and can't wait to tell you. Just in time, Corey comes in and asks if Sean called. They say no, but they ask why. And Corey explains that his mom took off. Alan and Amy are concerned. The lights flicker and Eric yells again from upstairs. Jason comes running down and tells them, everything is fine. Your son is fine. He just needs some ice. And then clearly in a frenzy, he opens up the freezer door and yanks out the entire bin of ice and goes running upstairs.
And I think that was an ad lib from Jay. I think at first it was like he goes in there and he grabs some ice and then like runs out with the ice. And then I think another take, he just grabbed the whole thing and got a much bigger laugh. I think that was Jay.
That's the way to go.
Jay. Yeah, that's funny. Definitely.
I love the second half of this scene. Or actually, I just think this scene in general was a great balance. You know, like nice to see Alan and Amy talking to each other about parenting and their feelings.
Kitchen scenes, man.
And but just also like I love Alan's insecurity and her supporting that. You know, and it just feels nice. It's been a while.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
It's a nice dynamic to see back. And then we're at Mr. Turner's apartment. Turner is on another date with Ms. Tompkins. They're getting cozy on the couch. And she says they've been dating for 3 months. She asks where this is going. He tries to get out of answering, and then there's a knock at the door. He tells her he did not plan this, but he's obviously thrilled to be saved by the knock. And it's Sean at the door who has a question. Sean then notices Ms. Tompkins, and he thinks they're just working late, and then quickly realizes, oh, they're on a date.
That was a great transition. That was a great beat there.
Boy, teachers, really, you guys sure work late.
Oh.
Very cute.
Very fun.
And then Sean apologizes and says he didn't realize they have personal lives, which is also
I love that.
So real life.
So, like, so
kids,
true.
Exactly the way kids
absolutely.
Think.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Miss Tompkins says she'll leave, and Sean says, no, don't, we'll all hang. She kisses Turner on the cheek and says, we'll talk. Sean comes in and says, I like her. Do you like her? I like her. And Turner asks Sean why he's there and why he's out so late. Sean starts to explain his dad is out looking for his mom and then asks a pretend random question about Forrest Hemingway.
Of course.
And Sean continues to stall and walks around the apartment. Sean sees some food on the kitchen table and he says, wow, you guys were really having a dinner. Turner offers him some leftovers, but Sean says, no, thanks. I already ate. And then as Turner starts to put it away, Sean says, oh, I might just pick at it. And then he starts feverishly eating.
Devouring in Sean fashion.
Exactly. I have a question. Do you think Sean went to the apartment wanting to spend the night there? Or do you think he just went because he like needed to talk to somebody friendly and was going to go back to the motel later? And because he seemed to like the idea of the motel, he seemed to like the idea of the pay-per-view. I mean, do you think he went there with the sole goal of like, I want to crash with Turner tonight. Like, I feel safer with somebody else around.
I don't think he thought it all that way through, but I think those goals are the same.
Okay. Yes. Makes sense.
I think the immediate need was, oh, Turner's apartment is right near this hotel. I can walk here. Right. I should go see Mr. Turner. Right. And maybe he has some food. And then, you know, and then it like, but I don't think Sean's thinking it all the way through. But
right.
Obviously that's what he really, right? It's like want and need.
Yeah,
right?
Well, exactly. It's what he needed to be, obviously, of course.
What he needs is, you know, apparent. And what he wants is more immediate than that. And he's thinking he can just hang out with Turner. Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's a little like how we've talked about the self-awareness certain characters have on Boy Meets World, where it would be a very Sean thing to say on the show. I went to Turner's house because I really needed a father figure and I needed somebody who felt like a moral compass and someone to feel grounded. But ultimately, kid logic, he just thought he would go there. But
so
deep down, we know.
I
know.
Yeah, like, of course. Yeah.
This scene feels very immediate. It feels very organic.
It feels really real.
Like, yeah, I love it.
It's much more meaningful and much more touching that Sean is exhausted and starving and not in any way, shape or form presenting as that, you know, he's showboating as something else.
And you and Tony together is just great.
It's so beautiful.
It's really, really great. It's such a good dynamic. The characters work so well together. It is, it's phenomenal. Yeah, really is.
This is so weird, but this is like maybe the first scene that while I was watching it, oh God, I don't know how to explain, like, I saw myself as a kid. Like, I don't know why. Like, obviously, I can look at all the other episodes, but I think when I watched the other episodes, there was something like I was putting myself in my own shoes and like imagining like what it was like to be acting in that scene, if I could remember it or if I did. But in this scene, I was like, oh, that's a kid. Like, that's a kid.
You're a little
in trouble.
Kid. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. I was like this, and I just saw myself as this young, and maybe because I could see Indy's face on my own face, like, because Indy looks like me, and I could see, like, there was a couple beats where I really, like, oh my, I was young. Like, I'm like this little vulnerable person. It's the first time I felt that way watching this show. Hmm. It's weird.
Well, Mr. Turner asks Sean where he's staying until his dad gets back, and Sean said his dad gave him some money for a motel down the street. Turner is concerned by what is alluded to being a shady motel and asks if he's sure he's going to be okay there. Turner says he can stay with him, and Sean says, nah, he already paid the guy $5 to turn on the TV, and he gave him clean sheets. Turner tells him, well, while you're there, you know, you can come over any time to relax, eat, talk, or not talk, just hang out. And as Turner keeps talking and cleaning up, he eventually turns around to notice that Sean has fallen asleep on the couch. Very sweet, touching moment. Turner says, I talk and he sleeps. It's like class. And he half-acidly puts a blanket on Sean. And the slow build of Turner as Sean's father figure is just really starting to pay off here.
It's amazing. It's great. So it's a great, great build and a great start to what's going to come.
Yeah, so nice. And then we're in Mr. Feeney's backyard. Turner is there explaining to Feeney Sean's current situation. He couldn't just drop him back off at the motel last night. Feeney asks where Sean is now, and he says he dropped him off at the Matthews house. And I love seeing this dynamic of Feeney and Turner, concerned adults, but also Feeney being the person that Turner goes to talk to him about what's going on. Feeney obviously knows these kids better than he does. And so just the way it feels, how naturally now Feeney and Turner are a part of this Matthews and Sean Hunter family.
Yeah.
Community. Yeah.
This like real this community of raising these children.
Yep.
Yeah.
That feels really nice.
It also makes perfect sense where he says to him, where were you? He's like, well, I just dropped him off at the Matthews house. Like, they didn't have to explain why he was there. It's like, of course he'd be there.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it was great.
And then Feeney says Chet should be able to find his way home. Even a pigeon can do that. But Turner needs to be careful about being an authority figure and a chum. He says the line between the two is very fine. And then Alan walks out.
It's going to become a big theme of the next season, right? Yeah. Like, that's the whole Turner-Sean dynamic.
Genuinely a thing that matters when you're a teacher. Yeah. I mean, that's a huge thing, is that there is that line. But am I getting too involved in somebody's life? And
yeah.
It's a
fine line, really, if you think about it. Any relationship an adult has with a child, it's a fine line between, you know, because I notice it as a director. Like, I want to be there for the actors that are a lot of times kids on the show, but I also can't be involved in too much of your personal life and your personal drama because, you know, it blurs the line.
Yeah, it blurs the line.
So those blurred lines between adults who have relationships, whatever those different types of relationships are with kids, it's always a fine line of not crossing a boundary. Because it's very easy to cross over one. It's very hard to ever put the boundary back up.
Yeah.
Once a boundary's been knocked over, it's much harder to build the barrier again.
Yep.
So Alan walks out with the trash and Turner thanks him again for coming on career day. And Alan says, no problem. Anytime. If those kids ever get rowdy, I'll just come on in and sedate them. And then Amy walks out and says Alan needs to come back inside because Chet Hunter is at their house. Turner asks if it's okay for him to join. He has some things he wants to say to Chet, and they make their way into the house. Feeney quickly calls Turner back and he says to tread softly.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things: watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car. Backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
Guys, this is a very big deal for me, so we need to treat it as such.
Should we have a horn or something?
Cue the horn!
Target Circle, the program we all know and love, and that I am a card-carrying member of, now has automatic deals.
That's right. The all-new Target Circle is free and easy to join.
And the simplest way to take advantage of the most deals at Target.
Now, when you shop in-store or online, all the incredible Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout. You don't have to do anything.
And the brand new Target Circle 360 offers unlimited same-day delivery.
It's the fastest way to get an order to your door or someone else's. I'm sending Danielle a box of Oreos.
Yum, thank you.
Right now, sign up for Target Circle 360 for just $49 for the first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price.
And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day.
Visit Target.com/circle or the Target app for more details.
Same day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in store or at Target.com/circle card.
Finding the right person for your team can be challenging. When it's time to hire, turn to Express Employment Professionals.
In a recent study by the Harris Poll, on behalf of Express Employment Professionals, 63% of hiring decision makers are planning to increase headcount at their company this spring, and more than half are doing so due to increased volumes of work.
Don't let the work overwhelm you. Let Express handle your hiring.
Express Employment Professionals is here to make hiring easier. We're in the business of recruiting talent.
Discover for yourself how working with the workforce experts can solve your staffing challenges.
With more than 860 locally owned offices, you'll find one near you at expresspros.com.
Each year, more than 70,000 businesses turn to Express to manage their hiring.
Make the most of your time and leave recruiting and hiring to the experts at Express.
Visit expresspros.com today.
And then we're in Corey and Eric's room. Corey and Sean are throwing a ball back and forth, and Sean says he's staying at a motel and invites Corey over to skateboard in the pool and watch cable.
Have you
ever talked about...
Not like this place.
I know, really funny
joke.
But before I even got to that funny joke about the cable, have we ever talked about you guys skateboarding?
Nope.
No.
Suddenly you guys are skateboarding in a pool? So you're like in a half pipe?
So you're good. You're instantly good.
Yeah, I was like, wow, okay. So Corey says, no, we have cable
it's
here.
A very
and Sean
LA
says,
kid thing, actually.
Yeah.
Now I guess everybody skateboards, but back then, like, California kids skateboarded.
Yeah.
I don't know about Philly kids, especially not in empty pools, but yeah.
Yeah. So Corey says, we have cable here. And Sean says, not like this. Corey says,
we recently discovered that Indy did not know what channels were.
What?
Yeah. Why would he know what a channel is?
You're right.
Well, don't
streaming.
You have channels
no
on
channel.
YouTube? Doesn't everyone have their own YouTube
well, that's
channel?
A different
he does not
kind
watch
of...
YouTube.
Oh,
Indy is
I thought
not
that,
well,
I thought that was
YouTube.
What all kids watch was
no.
YouTube.
Okay. No, he wants to, but we act like we only go to YouTube to look. I will
Smart.
Not let him watch YouTube. No,
Smart.
No, he doesn't know what a channel is. And we had to explain that it's something that's just airing and you have to choose whether to watch it or not. And then I got into this whole discussion about broadcast television. And then I was like, and then cable came in. He's like, and then you could pick what shows to watch. I'm like, no. That's all that meant. And then you had like 40 channels you didn't care about and three you did.
Oh my gosh.
He could not. And we had like a 45 minute conversation about like the evolution of television. And then he was blown away to discover that basically like right before he was born was when you could actually just pick something and watch it at any time.
Oh my gosh. That's so
instantly.
Funny.
Pick your show, pick your movie, any content you want, you can download. Like that didn't exist until 2008.
I still say, by the way, though, like watching something on streaming, if Adler goes, Mom, I don't want to watch this show. I'll say, okay, you want me to change the channel? Like I still, still say we're changing the channel, but really then I'm like, so what do you want to watch? Anything
that's
in the world.
All it is.
Name
yeah.
anything. Name yeah. a thing. Anything. I'll find it. I'll get it for you. So funny. So Corey says Sean can't live in a motel. And Sean says, why not? At least it can't drive away. Corey says he could stay with him. They're friends. And Sean says Corey doesn't have to worry about him. Just then, Chet calls for Sean to come downstairs. And Sean is excited. See, my dad is back. Everything's great.
I just very quickly loved that very quick beat between you and Ben. Because I thought it had nothing to do with Corey and Sean. Because Sean understood, he's like, I just want you to know I'm always be your friend. And you were like very earnestly like, no, I know. Like, I know you're there for me. This has nothing to do with you right now. And I know you'll always be there for me. It was really nice.
I love this episode for the fact that it doesn't become about Corey.
Right, exactly.
Corey doesn't make it about himself.
Exactly.
Corey is concerned for his friend and he can still play a part of it, but it's not. You know, it's
not how
and
it affects his life.
And he can also still recognize how his situation is different and why. He still notices, wow, my parents are reliable.
Yep. And he still has the ending beat, which is so wonderful. With
exactly.
His dad. So he still has a character arc. It's just not selfish. It's just not like... And
I love that. Yeah, it was great. You just kind of that, like, no, we're good. I know you're my friend. I know you're always there if I need you. Like,
And storyline-wise, you don't need this scene, right?
Right.
Right.
As far as like the A storyline goes, you don't need the scene. So this is the first thing to go. And I think it's to our show's credit, to our writer's credit, that they make sure that you have this important grounding beat where like this friendship is not going anywhere.
Yeah.
And that's Corey is there for him and Sean is there for Corey. You know, it's just,
Great. It's great. Nice. Yep.
It's also really nice too, that it helps set up that Sean, a kid who has been let down over and over and over again, still doesn't see it coming. That he still has the optimism that the minute his dad is there, he goes, see, it's fine. My dad's back. Everything's great, he says.
Yeah.
And
well,
so
at that age, I think you're still hoping you can't think that badly about your parents.
Oh, no.
You
know? Of course not.
I don't think it's at that age. I think it's all your life.
Yeah. But I think when you grow up, you see them better.
No, but the people I know who have been like severely let down by a parent, even in their 40s are still hoping that that parent
comes back. Yeah, I think that's probably true. I think there's more of a realization of knowing that it's not going to happen, but
there's a conscious realization, but emotionally,
they're still stuck
in that whatever age it was when they're hoping that their parent isn't.
That's probably true. Yeah.
Everybody I know who's, it sucks. I mean, that's what's so hard about these things happening to children, right?
Is that
a parent is just, it imprints. So, and if that parent imprints an abandonment, man,
that's it.
That's really hard.
This is tough. This whole storyline gets very real very quickly. It's really tough.
It does. Yeah. And then we're in the Matthews living room. Chet thanks Turner for taking care of Sean. The most important thing is that my boy is safe and being looked after. Sean asks Chet if he found Mom, and Chet says yes, but she gave me the slip again. We have to respect that, and that's why he's here. And Sean says, I thought I'm why you're here. And Chet says he respects Adam, and he just calls Alan Adam. And Chet asks Alan for a favor because his wife is out there, and she has his heart, and also his wallet, his keys, and his major credit card.
He's got one speech after another. Blake has just so got like monologue, and he's splitting attention. He's going over here, and then he's going over there, and then he's going over here. It's a really great performance for somebody who's never been on the show before, who is stepping into a role like this. He really nails this.
It's also so well written you get this character. And not only do you get the character, but you somehow love the character.
Even though he's doing this awful thing.
Yeah,
you're rooting for him.
You like him and you're still rooting for him.
Yep.
Right. A lesser writing staff or a lesser writer would just make Chet a villain, right? Like just make him the easy bad dad stereotype of some sort.
No layers.
But instead, you love Chet, and so you're in the same position as Sean, where you want to like this guy, and you don't, you want to let him off the hook.
Yeah,
you also are having the same optimism Sean has, which is this is going to work out, right?
Yeah.
You're going to do the right thing, right?
Yeah.
Like,
he'll be back in a couple of days or a few weeks.
Yeah, few weeks.
Really well written, really well acted. It just worked. So yeah, it was great.
It's really great. So, he asks Alan to take care of Sean, and Corey likes that idea. Turner says Chet should probably ask his son what he thinks, and Sean says he's okay with it. But then Sean also asks why he can't just go with his dad. And again, it's one of those just heartbreaking moments.
Gut-wrenching.
Where you realize, like, he would give up everything. Sean would give up everything just to be with his dad. I have to sleep in a...
Wherever. In a
trash can, under a bridge, doesn't matter.
Leave
I'd be
school,
with you.
Whatever I got to do.
Leave school, leave my best friend. Like, I don't care. You're my home, is what he's saying. And it's just so painful. So Chet says, no, he needs to stay back and go to school. Chet says it'll only be a couple of weeks and he will call in every night. Amy and Alan tell Sean that he is more than welcome to stay with them. And Chet is thankful for these fine people. Jason and Eric then walk in and Eric has a nosebleed. Eric asks how long that tree has been out there. And Chet says, come on, Sean, let's go get you a toothbrush and a new shirt before he leaves town. And he also asks Corey, just to clarify, your name's Corky, right? Which again, he now doesn't know any of these people well enough, even though they are the most important people outside of Mom and Dad to Sean. And Corey is very excited to have Sean stay, and Alan makes sure that Chet is coming back in a couple of weeks. And Chet says, even Texas women couldn't keep me from coming back here. And then
Random assortment of words that's actually very funny.
I know. Very funny.
Like Feeney's going to have a duck. Like, is that same?
I know.
Like,
I've never heard of it.
But it's also that delivery when he's got that kind of, even Texas.
Well, I've heard of he's going to have a cow.
Yeah.
So is there.
But has there been a saying about having a duck?
Yeah.
No,
it works. You believe it.
Just words. Yeah. They're great. Just the heart of a duck. Yeah. It's great.
Everyone leaves, and Turner tells Alan that Chet was right about one thing. Alan is a good man. And now in this moment is when I realized, what did Turner want to say to Chet other than the line where he said, shouldn't you ask your son what he thinks about this? Turner doesn't actually address
Chet. I thought that same thing. And then the way I rationalized it in my mind is he said, I've got some things I want to say to that man. And he was pissed. And as he's getting there, that's when Feeney says, be very careful. Don't cross the line. So I think he course corrected in his mind. what he was going to say.
Could be that what he was going to say was, listen, man, you can't ever do that again. Don't just leave your son. And then when he walked in, the news was,
I'm leaving my son.
I'm leaving my son. Yeah, and so he realized, like, oh, this is a person who that message is not
done
gonna,
already. Exactly.
Yeah, it's a done deal.
It's funny. I thought that same thing where it was like, he didn't actually address him, but
yeah. So now alone, Corey thanks Alan for coming to career day, but he left out the most important thing, all of the stuff he does after work for his friends and his family. And Corey says he thought he was the son of a grocer, but he really is the son of his father.
Oh, and then they, very sweet.
I know.
Amazing.
It's an incredible line. It's an incredible beat. And then Rusty's reaction is so not genuine, sentimental.
I know.
It's just so real. And it's just like, boom, I got you, dude. And like, oh, this is like one of my favorite endings of ever. Like,
agreed.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful. He smacks him on the belly.
Yes.
Which is so much, such a better reaction than I'm going to cry.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
Right. There's also not the typical sitcom music behind it.
I know.
Like all that. They don't do any of that. It was just a father and son. Awesome moment together.
Yep. They shake hands, basically. They do a little high five handshaky thing, and it's the end of the episode. And just beautiful.
Awesome.
So we're in the tag in the school cafeteria. Eric and Jason are eating and talking with all their SAT vocabulary words.
Eric is talking. We're not actually eating, but pushing the food around. Good actor pushing around.
A lot of big words.
No actual bites, but a lot of big words.
Eric is starting to feel confident with the test, and he's healing and he's getting all of his senses back. And Jason admits he's now worried about the math section. Eric is terrified. He didn't realize there was a math section. Jason says, it's half the test. Eric says, half? So what? Like 30, 40%? I mean,
that could have been
great
the end of the scene right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That could have just been, I just cut it because that killed me.
It was so funny.
You know where this is going.
And then Eric starts to panic. He gets up out of his seat and fully throws his lunch right on to Mr. Feeney. Again, we get another big food gag joke. And Mr. Feeney says,
it's just not that great because it's like preset food on Feeney.
But it's also, if you notice, because Susan even said, as we were watching, she's like, was there spaghetti on your plate? I didn't even see that. So we went back and looked. No, there was, but it wasn't mixed with all the salt and everything, or the sauce and everything. So it was like, it went from being white pasta with just a meatball on top to then being fully coated spaghetti all over.
Yeah. So how do you think this went down? Do you think that Michael and the team were like, we can't throw food at Bill Daniels? And so they just assumed? Or do you think Bill was like, you're not throwing food at me?
I don't think it has anything to do with that.
The obvious way to do this is to throw food. And
the problem is, it's not going to stick. It would hit him and fall straight down. So it wouldn't be enough of a...
Having directed many episodes with Michael Jacobs, that would not have stopped him. He would have insisted that we can do it live. And every time we had food or slime or anything on Girl Meets World, I had to actually try and make it happen. He would never let me do
that. It must have been
preset slime preset, because the comedy comes from watching it happen. So whether it sticks or not, he would have been like, we have to do it live.
No, you're right, because it would have been funnier. The reveal of him covered in it is not as funny as watching somebody get hit with it, even if it doesn't stick.
No.
So I don't know. Maybe he wasn't as big of a, maybe this is when he learned it.
Yeah, this is either Bill saying, "You're not going to throw food," or I think my take is that they preemptively were like, "We can't throw food."
It must, it must have been.
We have to just get him a pre-made suit that has food on it and have it be a reveal.
You're watching the moment when Michael Jacobs learned you have to do it live, and that this is a moment where he was like, "Yeah, let's do that. That sounds fine. Let's preset it. It'll be great." And they watch it. And he's like, "That's not funny. That's not funny.
Not funny.
I'm never doing that again.
It's not as funny."
And so now let's pay attention if we ever see it again.
Okay.
But see, we've already done food and water fights and stuff, and it's always been live. Like we've already done that on our show, and it's already been like, you know, you have to see it. The pie has to hit the face.
Right.
You don't just show like, you know,
somebody then covered in pie.
Yeah.
All right. Interesting.
Well, there we go. All right. So Mr. Feeney says, I hate SAT time. And that is the end of our episode. So, I mean, what a great episode.
Yep.
One of our best, I think.
Yep. One of the best. One of my
Matt
favorite.
Nelson coming in strong.
Coming awesome. In.
Blake coming in strong. Yeah, Blake coming in strong. Maddie Nelson coming in strong.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Tony Quinn and you know, Deshaun and Mr. Turner stuff coming in strong. It's a great episode.
Well, thank you guys for this joining us for this episode of Pod Meets World. Our next episode will be season 2, episode 23, Home. It is the season finale of season 2. I can't believe it. It originally aired May 19th, 1995. And we will be welcoming back the guys from Bruh Meets World for a full Pod Meets World season recap. Yes. So we have that to look forward to. As always, you can follow us on Instagram, Pod Meets World Show. You can send us your emails, podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. And we have merch.
Just another merchy Monday.
I love it. Yeah. Podmeetsworldshow.com. Thank you all for joining us. Will, send us out.
We love you all. Pod dismissed. Pod Meets World is an iHeart podcast produced and hosted by Danielle Fishel, Will Friedle, and Ryder Strong. Executive producers Jensen Karp and Amy Sugarman. Executive in charge of production, Danielle Romo. Producer and editor, Tara Sudbach. Producer, Jackie Rodriguez. Engineer and Boy Meets World superfan, Easton Allen. Our theme song is by Kyle Morton of Typhoon, and you can follow us on Instagram at Pod Meets World Show or email us at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby. When I'm on my way to drop off the kids at school and I'm on about 5 hours of sleep and I haven't had my coffee yet, I'm truly one of a kind.
Yeah, this sounds like the beginning of a horror movie.
It is. But there is one thing I can do immediately to bring some comfort and calm to the situation and keep me moving forward. Eat Keebler Sandies.
I like to think that if the good-looking guy was still around, sitting on the couch, comforting himself about not getting into college, he'd ditch the Cocoa Puffs and down some Keebler Sandies instead.
Mixed with chocolate syrup?
Ooh, why not?
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat to keep you going.
Each Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie is baked to perfection by the Keebler elves for a light sweetness and a texture that melts in your mouth.
The next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for Keebler Sandies shortbread cookies to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.